It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, live and in your face, and talking about all kinds of fun things today.
Yeah, and we just heard that portions of the show might be pre-recorded, but let me assure you, they are not.
Well, the commercials are.
That is true. So, but that's not part of the show.
That's not really part of the show.
No, it's different.
I guess we do pay for those, but yeah. Anyway, I don't know why that snuck its way in, which leads me to a quick but general discussion on financial radio shows. Most of them are.
A lot of them are.
Yeah. So it's very hard to find a call-in show where you can actually have some input. So we will do what we do every week, and that's talk about the things that we like to talk about, things that are happening, unless and until somebody calls and says, I want to talk about something else. You will go immediately to the head of the line, and we will discuss whatever it is you would like. If you are a little leery of coming on air, and I promise you we don't bite, you could always email us at info@vanweefinancial.com, and Adam will monitor that, and we can get it in. And if anybody calls with a question we can't answer, we will make a promise to you, and we'll keep it, that we'll get back to you by next show. So you can stump the band once in a while, but then again, I've always admonished people, your job is to make us look good, so the easier the question, the better we like it.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. Why not? All right. Gosh, what a week, huh? October surprise.
Yep. Came through once again.
I'll give you the trivia question after the first break, and it is about the October surprise, the whole term. But lo and behold, if we don't have some presidential COVID going on now, things look like they're going to be pretty good. The market was doing really well this week.
It was really good this week up until Friday.
Yeah, that you can imagine, you know, as an investor, you think, oh my God, what does it mean? Well, right now, being just a month and a day yesterday away from the election, that question loomed a lot larger than it normally would have. You know, what's it going to mean? And I will tell you exactly what it'll mean a while after the election. You're going to have to just hold till then.
That's really amazing.
It's a great
radio.
Yeah, great. Right there. Yeah. Great hindsight I have.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, so the president, the first lady, a bunch of staffers all tested positive. We found out, well, I found out really early Friday morning when I woke up, but it actually, I think he tweeted it out around 1 a.m. And, of course, the futures took a dive. They plunged as much as 500 points. But the Dow actually managed to turn briefly positive on Friday.
Yeah, it's quite a comeback.
Yeah, that is a big comeback. And it ended up down less than 0.5%. So it wasn't nearly as bad as you might have predicted. The NASDAQ took a bit of a turn for the worse, but it was up higher for the week. So it really didn't affect the weekly numbers that much. In fact, the Dow ended up gaining 1.9%. The NASDAQ and S&P were both up 1.5%. So the bigger drop in the NASDAQ just brought it right back down to being in line with where the S&P was for the week. Actually, those numbers really surprised me when I was putting together my show notes this morning.
Yeah, you and me.
I did not realize that the week was that good heading into Friday. I knew it was a good week, but not that good.
You know, when you're left with a taste in your mouth that was kind of acrid from Friday's news and events and market and all that, it's really easy to kind of forget that early in the week, things were pretty jubilant.
No doubt. I want to talk more about COVID in a minute, but first I just want to note that we wrapped up a great third quarter on Wednesday. And although we had a bad September, the quarter was still pretty remarkable. The NASDAQ led the way higher, gaining 11%, while the S&P added 8.5 and the Dow 7.6. Bonds took a bit of a breather over the quarter, just under 0.5% in the positive direction, but they had a pretty astronomical climb earlier this year, so that's not unexpected.
Now, and for year to date, all but the Dow again. It's kind of the position we've been in for a good share of the second half of this year.
Yep, the NASDAQ year to date up 23% plus. S&P just over at 3.6%. The Dow's down about 3%, so not too bad. If you told me that after a year where the all three gained between 22% and 35% in 2019, that you could get between -3 and 23% the following year, I would take it. We can stop the year right now.
Close the books.
Yeah.
Especially
with the amount of turmoil we've had this year. It's been absolutely crazy. So back to COVID, you might be wondering where we stand with the disease today. As always, when I talk about this, there's good news and bad news, and we continue to ramp up the number of COVID tests per day. They briefly started to decline, I think, as people were more lax about getting tested or just, I guess, the cases were going down. People were experiencing less other illnesses maybe and didn't need to get tested, but they've started to climb again. But even with the additional tests, the positive rate, test rate continues to trend lower at the same time. So we're doing more tests and finding less cases per test. So that's good news. The number of confirmed cases has risen over the last month. It's still way below the peak from the summer, though. So it was trending down pretty steadily, and then over the last month, it started to creep up, but it's not exponentially going up. It's just a much more mild rise in cases. And the really good news out of all this is that deaths per day are still declining. All of that other stuff being true, the deaths per day are still declining. So hospitalizations, on the other hand, appear to have either bottomed and are going flat or have even potentially started to rise again. I want to see about 3 more weeks of data before I confirm that hospitalizations are rising again. It's hard to say at this point because it could just be a statistical bump or something like that, but it does appear that we may – that would be a negative, that hospitalizations may be trending up again. So interesting. It's really hard to get a handle on this thing. I don't think anyone has a really good idea of how what the future looks like or how the country's going to deal going into the fall. There's a lot of talk from the experts that they're worried about the increased transmission with the change of season, but no one actually called the summer spike, so the fact is they really don't know. And the president, in his age group, for those over 70, the mortality rate is about 5.4%, which means that gives him a 94.6% chance of surviving, and it's actually probably higher because he has no comorbidity. Yeah. So,
he's a little overweight.
Yeah, but he's not.
That's less important than if you have other illnesses such as pulmonary problems or heart problems.
Right. So the most likely outcome is that the president will be fine. I mean, that's 96%+ chance, yeah, I would say.
Exactly.
So there. So that's where we are with COVID. It's not great news. It's not terrible news. It's just kind of we just all want to get out of this thing, and it's taking way longer than what anyone would hope for, I think.
Yeah. Well, after the break, I want to get into the jobs reports, and some of the usual suspects are out there just trying to bend these things so it's the worst possible outcome that you can imagine, and it's just not.
Everyone looks at the headline number, but you have to look at all the numbers, and there is one good number that we'll talk about after the
there
break.
There is, and there was also one number that concerns me a lot. Although I can explain it, it concerns me a lot, and that means that a lot of people influence the numbers in a way that you might not expect right now until I explain it to you. So hang on until after the break, and we'll teach you how, again, to look at these things. You have to consider the source whenever you're reading or hearing about anything like that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Shop the 904, as they say. You've heard the term October surprise. It doesn't really apply to what happened yesterday with the president and the virus, but it could. It basically could mean anything. Dates back to 1980 when Ronald Reagan's campaign manager coined the term. I don't know if anybody really knows that. But it could have been a lot earlier when the term October surprise would have been first used. In fact, it could go all the way back to 1912 when something happened to some president. Do you know what it is? It's kind of interesting. So there's your October surprise question for today. All right, in terms of jobs, what was the number that you really liked?
The number I really liked was the unemployment rate, which unexpectedly dropped below 8%, uh-huh. down to 7.9%. The forecast was to drop from 8.4 to 8.2. So that was a very pleasant surprise.
All right, and now I'll be the little bit of a wet blanket because that's directly related to the number I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
696,000 people left the workforce. The participation rate dropped 0.3. Now, why, you might imagine, would almost 700,000 people just drop out of the workforce? I have a theory. I can't prove it, but I have a theory. In order to collect unemployment checks, you have to prove that you were looking for work. So a lot of people were getting these $600 checks, and a lot of them weren't about to go back to work either because they were making more. You know what a $600 check means every week? It means a full-time job, 40 hours, well, at the intended minimum wage at 15.
Plus, that is plus, 600 plus the plus, state
yeah.
benefits. So in a
they
lot of cases,
make that much.
It's over $800 a week.
Right, and a lot of the people weren't making anywhere near that, so of course they were not going to go back, which, of course, was the conservative argument for cutting off that system. Well, the system lapsed, and they've been negotiating since, and the Republicans were trying to get it down to 300, which would have made a lot more sense from the standpoint that it might put more people over the line where they would rather go back to work, because I'm not blaming the people. If you're getting $600, $700, $800, $900 a week in unemployment, hallelujah.
Yeah, I mean, if someone offered me more money to not work than to work.
Especially since the PPP expired also, which means your employer, your former employer, was probably not going to get a lot of competition for when they get you back. In other words, you can wait based on this whole thing. So my theory is when the $600 check stopped, a lot of these people said, well, I don't ever look for work anymore until they started up again. So they just left the workforce, and I think that was part of the big drop in the unemployment. But that doesn't make it all bad.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that theory, but it makes some sense.
It's just mathematics. You know,
yeah.
It's a numerator and a denominator.
Right.
That's all. You got to see what the influence is on both of them. But what did happen, we started out Wednesday with the ADP private payrolls number, and you cannot imagine a world, unless you really try, or a number like 749,000 new jobs in a month would be bad news. But if you're the liberal media, you can.
Oh, I didn't see that. That actually beat expectations.
Yeah, but so. Even then, some of them said, oh, that's just further signs that the economy is slowing.
Wait, what?
Which it is not. The no, economy's growth is slowing, but the economy's growing like crazy.
But that number is actually higher than last month's number,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, it was a great month for that. But then on Thursday morning, we get the new unemployment claims, and they also dropped quite a bit. It's still a high number, granted. But, of course, what does the media say? Oh, they're still way too high.
Well, of course it is when two of the biggest states in the country won't open back up.
Exactly.
And they are accounting for, I think, over a quarter of all the claims.
Well, and then there's Illinois and Michigan.
True.
Who are still, they may not be in 100% lockdown, but Governor Widmer got her rear end handed to her by the court.
Supreme Court. Their Supreme Court.
The same thing that happened in Pennsylvania about a week or week and a half ago. These governors are finding out that they have overstepped their bounds and that all of us who have been yelling and screaming about it are absolutely correct.
Yep.
They can't do it. And now, of course, Biden wants to make a mask on everybody. So if you're out fly fishing in Idaho all by yourself and the warden comes along and you're not wearing a mask, then toss you in jail or fine you or something. This is ridiculous. Anyway, I digress, as I so often do. But then on Friday, the big numbers come out, and I would call it a blowout number on the top line the establishment survey for the government. It came out, I don't even know if I wrote down the whole number. A big one. What was it, 760 or
661,000.
Okay. Now, any world where 661,000 is considered bad news has to be a political world because you can't look at 661,000 and call it anything else. So they did, and embedded in that 660,000, how about this one, 130,000 manufacturing jobs.
Yeah, the manufacturing data has been very strong.
Yep. How about this one? 60,000 construction jobs.
Also another area that's been very strong.
What is it you really want for your economy to come back? Manufacturing and construction are two of them. One leads to the other and vice versa. Now, how about this one for a surprise? Small number, but it's a positive number. 7,000 in mining and resources.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mining's been waning really, really badly. So if you put all that together, somehow some people can call it bad news. But aside from that little hiccup that I talked about a few minutes ago, this was a blowout.
Yeah, the forecast was 859,000. That's why they're saying it
was
a miss.
Well, how do you make something look bad? You overforecast it. And then you compare it and say, oh, it was a disappointment. So you got to really consider the source and all this stuff. Now, U6 is what we report normally, and that's the one that fell under 8. U3 is very important, and that fell to 12.8%, which, if you look at the entire Obama administration, it was right around there the whole time and had nothing to do with the pandemic. So that's not a half-bad number given what we're doing now. Now we got to lift the lid off of the restrictions on the economy, open up those arguably 4 states that need to be opened up, and they're just not going to do it until the court forces them to do it. So I'll tell you what, if I had a little business in Michigan, that store would be open right now. As of this morning, I would have opened it up and hung a big banner across it. Open for business. Up yours, Governor. What's your name?
Yeah. Or I would leave.
Do I sound bitter?
A little bit.
I am.
But
I think
a lot of people are going to vote with their U-Haul trucks. There's anecdotal evidence that that's what's happening in California already.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you don't agree with those types of things, don't expect it to change anytime soon, because California is not going to flip red. So that's going to be life there. If you don't want to put up with it, move to, unfortunately, a lot of them are moving to Texas, but they still vote the same.
Yeah, that's a real hit to the possibilities there. But I still think we've got a really good shot at a blowout election. That's my most optimistic side. And you know me, I'm always the optimist anyway.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but okay.
It depends what day it is when you ask anybody. How do you feel about it?
It's true.
Know one thing. Our clients are certainly inquisitive right now. Everybody who comes in or calls, we're talking about what to do, what to plan, what to do if, what to do before. And I say once the cat is out of the bag, you better have made your plans one way or the other. So what we're doing is, for some people who are truly concerned about it, we're pre-positioning some cash. We're building up very slowly. Who knows? I can't tell you what's going to happen. I can't tell you how the market would take it in either case.
No, it's a big unknown right now, and the betting odds are all going towards the Democrats.
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily guarantee that that's what's going to happen, but that's what the mood of the country is. People that are placing those wagers are definitely thinking that Democrats are going to win. Now,
there are about 5 different methods of Democrats winning, though. One house, two houses, two houses, but no White House.
That's
right. But one house. Yeah.
And the reason this is all so important is if you look at the Biden tax plan, it is very unfavorable to us.
Funny you should bring that up.
To the American people. Yep. So he keeps saying that he's not going to raise taxes on people making less than $400,000. But he also, in the same breath, will say, I'm going to repeal the Trump tax cuts. Now, those two things.
For the upper ones, he says.
I've heard him say it both ways.
But what happens in 2026?
They expire anyway.
Yeah, he's going to raise taxes by doing nothing on those groups.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's, I mean, he wouldn't even, there's no way he's going to be president in 2026.
No, but they won't have been made permanent by then, which they will be if Trump gets reelected.
Perhaps, yeah, but he says that it will only he'll only do the top ones. But I've also seen him say, "I'm going to repeal the Trump tax cuts." So I don't know which one will happen.
Well, how many sides of his mouth can he talk out of?
Fair. So, but that concerns me, because that would really affect people at the lower end of the income bracket.
And I'm going to tell you before very long exactly what he wants to do to you and your 401k, and you are not going to be a happy camper.
No, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it really is. All right, we've got just so much to talk about today, but I want to remind everybody again, what could have been the first October surprise back in 1912 when something happened to a president that could easily have qualified for a real October surprise. And then there's a little Paul Harvey moment that goes on the end of that because there's a great rest of the story. So don't go anywhere. Think it over, and we will be back after we pay some bills. Got a lot to talk about today, folks. A lot. All right. Be good. Be there. Be healthy. All those things that are so important right now. We'll see you in a couple minutes. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we have on the phone Ron. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Never better, thank you. And you?
Very well. Very well. Great. Thank you. We're going to get the grass cut today before the big rain comes tomorrow.
Got to dodge raindrops these days, don't we?
You got that right.
What's happening?
I was going to ask a question. I was going to try and answer the trivia question, but I want to ask a question first. Could someone explain to me what the 50 and 200-day moving averages are? And is it a good thing when a stock goes above it, or is it better when it goes below it? I don't understand. I hear this terminology all the time.
It's
just went below its 200-day moving average.
Good question.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very popular measure used by Chartists, which is a style of investing that tracks movements in the stock market or the stock chart. And the 200-day moving average and the 50-day moving average are probably the most common averages that are looked at. There are others. People look at the 100-day occasionally.
10-day, 20-day.
Yeah, there's several others, but those are the two most common. And the people generally think that a stock will, when it crosses one of those averages, it's a positive sign. If it's moving in the up direction, and if it's moving in the down direction or selling off, that it's a negative sign to cross one of those. And if it crosses, if you cross one of them and the other one is lower, they look for a stock to bounce off of the next one. So if you cross over the 50, which is more of a short-term average of the stock price, and it's starting to head towards the 200, they usually will watch for it to try and bounce off the 200 or cross it, which is a very negative sign. It's not 100% reliable, but it's amazing how many times when you look at it that a stock will trade right at that 50-day average or 200-day average for a while, or it will bounce off of it.
The computers are programmed.
Yeah. It's
they see it, they buy it.
It's pretty remarkable.
There's no emotion in it.
And all it is simply what it sounds like. They take the average stock price over the last 50 or 200 days, and it changes every day based on the price the next day. So it's pretty remarkable how reliable it is.
Yeah. The whole process is called technical analysis, which is different than fundamental analysis. Fundamentals look for the intrinsic value of the company, whatever its products and people and patents and all that stuff. But the technical people don't give a rip what company it is or what they're doing. All they care about is the prices.
And the patterns.
Yeah, and the patterns. You can have, there are some patterns that are widely known, like the cup and handle or the double bottom or whatever. But the main way that I see for a lot of people is when the 50 and the 200-day moving averages are both going up and the stock price crosses over both of them. That's called a golden cross. It's supposed to be one of the more bullish things. So if you look for a chart, or if you look for a list of companies that have had the Golden Cross lately, those are supposed to be the hot ones right now. And if you're a trader, a short-term trader, that's what you might want to consider getting into. Now, let me tell you something, though. The Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards does not like to hear any discussion of technical analysis for its people like we are, members of that. We do some of it anyway, but nobody can help to look at it, but they do not like that.
It's absolutely something I will look at, but it's not my sole decision-making when it comes to picking investments.
So I don't know if that helps you a lot or not, but that's what it's all about.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Sure.
And can I give one more question? How can Mr. Steve be so confident about the election after watching that debacle?
Yeah.
I don't even call it a debate. That was embarrassing.
Ron, I'm with you. I don't understand his optimism either.
People who know me know I am a cockeyed optimist. That doesn't mean I have a great track record, though.
Okay.
Ask my wife.
Okay. If we were to play golf, are you one of those guys that would tell me you're a 2 handicap or something and proceed to shoot 106? Yeah.
That's why I gave it up so long ago. Did you want to take shot at the October surprise?
I think it was when he wasn't the president, but he was running for president. Theodore Roosevelt was shot while giving a campaign speech and continued to finish his campaign speech before they even took him to that hospital.
You are exactly right. It was a little misleading because I said president, but he was about to become. But yeah, he took a bullet in the chest. And
man,
but he pulled out. Was it in the hand or in the chest? I know it got all over his speech papers. So he pulled out his bloody speech papers and read it for an hour and a half, and then went for medical attention.
Boy,
tough guy, huh?
Talk about when men were men, huh?
No kidding.
No kidding. Well, you know his reputation, which was apparently very well earned. He was the great outdoorsman. Isn't that funny?
That's one heck of a man there.
Yeah, you can tell the Secret Service wasn't then what it is today. They would have had him like Reagan into that hospital fast. I don't care where he was. Very well done. Thank you. We'll put you on hold, and Alan will get your name and address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Thank you, guys. Great show as always.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Kind of funny, isn't it? You get a bullet wound and I got a speech to give.
I can't imagine.
And apparently he was able to concentrate and get through the whole speech, too. I don't know what happened to the shooter.
I don't know. That's not a story I was familiar with prior to
That. The rest of the story would be, again, what happened to the shooter, who was it, and what happened to him. But I thought the rest of the story was that he finished the speech no matter what.
Yep.
Tough guy. And he won. So people apparently like that. Well, let's see. What would Mr. Biden do to your 401k? Nothing good. I don't know how many people know what the limits are today. For the people who can absolutely put away the most because they make a lot of money at very successful companies or whatever, they're right age, of course, because part of it's age-related, they can put about $63,000 away pre-tax in a 401k or personal 401k this year. And that can make a lollapalooza of difference in how big your account gets and your current tax bill. The U.S. government realized decades ago that people were not saving enough to do their own retirements. And Social Security was never really designed to be a retirement system. It was a supplemental system, sort of the proverbial safety net under what else you did. But that was back in a time when almost everybody got out of school, got a job with a big company, went to work for a few decades and accrued a pension and retired happily ever after. And with the addition of a little Social Security to supplement it, they lived very well. And that income was with them as long as they were alive. Well, pensions weren't always very secure. So back in 1973 and 4, the government realized this and they wanted to do something about it. And one of the problems that they've been having was that the pension plans were actuarially funded, but they weren't actually actuarially funded, if I might say that a few times. What was happening was the pension plan was sort of the last thing that people put their money in for the year. Not people, I mean the employers, whether it was a big company or medium company, whatever. And most of the big companies were dependent on, I almost hate to use Ponzi scheme, but what happened was the money that was going to be paid out was partly in the fund, but it was also partly coming in for the new people who were working. So if the company kept prospering, very similar to Social Security today, then it would keep growing, it would keep working well. Well, just as Social Security has recognized a problem recently, the pension plans also started having a problem. And through a couple of the recessions and such, some of the companies went under. It happened to a very famous one back in my wife's hometown, where we lived for a while, called the Gorton Machine Company. And Gorton had people that had 35, 40, 45 years on the payroll. And they hit some tough times and sold a few things, that sort of thing. And what happened was their pension plan just terminated. It ran out of money. And It left a lot of people, long-term employees, with nothing, absolutely nothing. It's not a pretty story to tell, and there was nothing really backing it up back then. So what Congress did, recognizing that this problem was imminent, they passed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, or ERISA as it's known now. And what ERISA did was it first addressed the funding of these pension plans. Now, it didn't solve everything, but it made a good start, and it created some catch-up rules where companies had to put more in. Well, once ERISA was out there and some things were realized that it needed more, it was amended a couple times. I'll pick this up right on the other side and tell you how it led into today. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam and I were just talking about the whole pension thing, and he reminded me of something I thought was very germane also. The government, as usual, can't stop meddling in things. When the times were bad, and then they passed the ERISA and started forcing catch-up contributions to bring the pension funds back up to date, well, sometimes something works. So things were good, and people were getting hired, and the pension funds were growing again, and they got actually a little overfunded relative to what the actuaries needed. Well, the whole idea of actuarially funding something is that you account for good times and bad times. So the good times float the bad times, and then it's replaced after the bad times by the upcoming good times. Well, government couldn't leave it alone because it was an untaxed pool of money, and they, of course, it's like nature abhors a vacuum. The government abhors an untaxed pile of money. So they made them distribute the money out, bringing the funding down, and of course that money that was distributed out became taxable, so they had to pay it in taxes, brought the
They did two things. They lowered the amount that people were, or companies were required to put in, and they made them increase the payouts to existing pensioners.
Yeah. So all that money became suddenly taxable.
Yep.
It also put them in a position where the next bad time was going to cause another problem. But of course, it didn't think of that. So but then we fast forward up to 1978. And what happened there? They had a Revenue Act, which they do, you know, every few years they have to have a Revenue Act because Lord knows they aren't collecting enough yet. And the Section 401k was introduced into the U.S. tax code. The Section 401k did not create the 401k plan. It was actually just a modification of the existing profit-sharing plan. The old profit-sharing plans were very simple. Company showed a profit at the end of the year. X percent could go into the profit-sharing fund, and that was split among all of the employees. Pretty easy stuff. But as of 1978... that Section 401k added on to the ability of the employees to defer some of their own salary into their own account. So now it had two sources of funding. Well, that became very popular, as you know, because most people have one. If you don't have one, you probably know somebody who does. And over time, more laws were put into effect, and there were more and better ways to add to your own account. So you improve your current tax situation, and you vastly improve your intended retirement plan. In other words, it was a great system. Well, unfortunately, the little people who work for themselves, had absolutely no way to do that much good because Congress, in its wisdom, has always suppressed the ability of individuals to contribute to their IRAs. That number was $2,000, I think, for years and years and years, and went to three. And finally, it's been getting a little bit of a boost. We're up to seven if you're 50 or more. That's paltry compared to the up to $63,000 for the 401ks. But they did invent our personal favorite, which is called the personal 401k or the individual 401k. Or there's a few names it goes by. All that means is for a one-person company, self-employed person, and a spouse if the spouse actually contributes to the company, not to the plan, to the company, you can have up to those two people, but nobody else can be in it, and you still get the same limit. So we have done a lot of these for a lot of clients over time for successful people. So all of this stuff is going along very, very nicely, having a remarkable run of successes. And as I like to put it, the system was not broken. So along comes Mr. Biden, who decides that the system isn't fair. Now, he wants to do something about it. You have probably heard about the 110-page agreement with Bernie Sanders that he signed. It is called the Biden-Sanders Unity Task Force Recommendations. You can look it up if you want to. It's all over the place. It's a policy statement for the 2020 Democrat presidential election. It purports to solve pretty much all of society's problems. The opening line, for those of you who love this kind of thing, is, quote, climate change is a global emergency. Well, if I disagree with the first line, then I'm probably going to disagree with a lot more. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. The document itself is referred to by a lot of the conservative media as a manifesto, which I find pretty perceptive. Anyway, according to Biden, their goal is to equalize the network of retirement savings tax breaks. That sounds okay, a little warm and fuzzy, right? Equalize, good. Well, not maybe so much. It's punishing the successful. How do people normally become successful? The lucky few, the 10% or less in this country, were born to it. But the other 90-plus percent of the people got it the old-fashioned way. They spent their own time and money going to school and working hard and inventing things and so on, and they became successful. The more successful they became, the more money they could put into these plans. Everything was fine. Well, not according to Biden. He wants to do the following. Reduce the pre-tax savings to the lesser of $20,000 or 20% of pay, whichever is less. So, if you're currently putting in $50,000, $60,000, $63,000, and things are still good and you're working hard, all that, that's going to go down to 20, which means the higher earners are going to have $43,000 more in taxable income this year, and they're going to have that much less to grow compounded in a tax-deferred environment for someday. In what world does that make sense? Not the one right here. I'll tell you that. And I just can't look at it and help but get a little funny taste in my mouth.
That, not only that, but if you think about, forget about the solo K, but even just a normal 401k, yeah. The limits are, what, 19,000? 19,5, yeah. And so
plus
the catch up.
50, yeah.
Yeah. So you're,
you can't even do that.
You can't even do the 25,000 or 26,000 that's currently allowed.
Yeah, it's 26 right now.
But if you're over, of a certain age, and then I don't see how this benefits anyone.
No. So it's based on some very faulty assumptions, as is the raising of the corporate tax from 21 to 28. The raising the corporate tax is going to stimulate companies to move here and hire people because they have to pay 7% more. Not in my world, again. But this is what we're in for. And as much as I don't like to do any sort of lecturing about politics, this is about your money. And it's about your retirement, and it impacts every single one of you who's working and putting money away. And I cannot just sit here and watch this sort of thing happen. This tax plan is going to cost Americans out of their pocket between $3.5 and $4 billion over 10 years, and I fail to see how that's going to be good for anybody. My conclusion, very simple, is to beware of politicians abusing words such as fair or equal. You can be assured that what follows those words will be neither. So I've had my say for today, haven't I?
So the good news about that is that if it happens, there are things that you can do about it. You're not stuck contributing to a 401k that is not going to benefit you as much as it used to. And in fact, the theory is that if Biden does get elected and all of this goes through, that Roths and traditional type plans will flip. So in modern times, it's been that if you make a little bit of money and you're at a lower tax bracket, you contribute to a Roth. It'll benefit you more in the long run. And vice versa, if you make a lot of money, the benefit is by putting it into a traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But under the Biden plan, if you make a lot of money, it actually, the math works out, so you don't get your money taxed twice, that you would benefit more by putting it into a Roth instead of a traditional 401k or IRA.
So, and so increase your tax bill now,
but
cut it later.
Decreases it dramatically to zero later. So they're
assuming they leave the law.
No matter what happens, we're going to do our best to figure out how to maximize the dollar value for our clients.
If you come to us looking for advice, we'll tell you what will happen this way, what will happen that way. All right, a little quick anecdote here. Most of you are familiar with Tesla, and some of you with Nikola, which is a new competitor coming up. And they're both named after Nikola Tesla, who died in 1943. He died destitute in New York City. And there was a rumor out that he had invented a death ray. So they brought in, New York brought in an engineer to look over the estate and see if there was anything dangerous in it. And he concluded the death ray was never actually constructed, so there was no problem. That professor, the engineer, was named John G. Trump, uncle to Donald J. Trump. Very strange how the world works, isn't it? All right, we're going to have to get out of here again. I don't know where the time goes, but thanks to everybody for listening. We'll see you again next week at the same time. You've been listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour.